Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and let's continue our series Context and a Movie, where we pair a film critic with an expert in a field to talk about a current film. Today, Zero Dark Thirty, Catherine Bigelow's portrayal of the decade-long search for bin Laden, which led to his death in the spring of 2011. A.O. Scott, Tony Scott, is the film critic for The New York Times. Mark Danner has written about the fight against al-Qaeda and the use of torture for the New York Review of Books, among other places. His most recent book is Stripping Bare the Body, Politics, Violence, War. His 2005 book was Torture and Truth, America, Abu Ghraib, and the War on Terror. Tony Scott, Mark Danner, welcome back to WNYC.
Hey.
Thank you. Thank you, Brian.
And we know there have been reviews and opinion pieces written about this film, particularly on the torture front, for weeks before it was released, but it didn't hit the theaters really until just last week. And it reminded me a little bit in that respect of Django Unchained, where we saw Spike Lee criticize the movie while refusing to see it. So, Tony, I wonder if you think that's a good thing, that we have this media discussion for weeks that sort of frames the issue before the public actually gets to see the film.
Well, I think it's kind of unavoidable at this point. I mean, as a film critic, I always like to think that people should, you know, express opinions about movies once they've actually seen them, and that the discussion goes better when as many people as possible have had a chance to see things. But the media and the way that we talk about movies tends to be very front-loaded, and partly that's by design. You know, in Oscar season and at the end of the year, the distributors of these movies are urging people to write about them and talk about them, and not always letting them see them. And so I think it got a little bit out of Sony's control as the criticism of the movie started to come in. But I think that, you know, a movie that takes on an important and controversial and interesting issue that a lot of people have strong feelings and opinions about is inevitably going to be talked about this way. And I think that it's been a good thing. I mean, I was a little taken aback that some of the strongest early attacks were from people who had not seen the movie, because I don't think that's the most responsible way to do it. But I do think that the issue of how torture is depicted in this movie is a serious one, not just in terms of the movie, but in kind of bringing us back to a lot of the arguments that were going on you know, in Mark's sphere, in the political sphere,
in mid-decade,
throughout the last 10 years.
Yeah. And listeners, now that the movie has been out for a week, if you've seen it, we can take a couple of calls on this. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or post to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. And Mark, much of the criticism of the film had to do with torture, but for all its action sequences, this film is really an ode to wonk work in a way, right? Ultimately, it's one analyst pouring through hours of tape and reams of intelligence following a tiny lead over the course of a decade. And yes, it's SEAL Team 6 that kills bin Laden, but it's a tiny glasses-wearing woman with a PhD in Arabic training who's the real hero. Do you like that it gives intelligence analysts their due?
Well, I think it's quite true that it will give many viewers their first glimpse of the way that the war on terror was fought and a world that they probably know very little about, as you say, intelligence wonks and others. And I think that's salutary. You know, I think this will be a very different kind of movie for 90% of the viewers who see it. It's also a very powerful movie. I mean, it works on its own terms, I think, extremely effectively. It's kind of a great example of contemporary filmmaking with a driving kind of propulsive narrative, beautifully edited, powerful scenes and so on. My problem with it is that I think most viewers won't really take away the message that you just described, Brian. I think the most powerful scenes tend to be those that are most, as it were, questionable when it comes to veracity. And that obviously is I mean the scenes of intense interrogation, enhanced interrogation, or torture, which really begin the movie. And, you know, to me, the fascinating question isn't whether this is an accurate depiction of how the hunt for bin Laden went, because I think it's fairly clear that it's not accurate when it comes to enhanced interrogation in particular. What's interesting to me is why a movie that was trying to, or at least said it was trying to give you a true depiction of what actually happened based on true events and so on, why it chose this path, why it chose to stray from the truth in fairly important ways when it did. And I think there's a problem here, which is that torture fits very well into a narrative, a heroic narrative of Americans sacrificing their ideals in order to defend the country. Torture is highly cinematic. It's highly televisual, as we know from the series 24. And it tends to capture the imagination of viewers, and I think Americans, who want to know that their government is willing to do everything it can, even make sacrifices in the moral realm to protect them. And so, you know, I think in a sense the filmmakers, I mean, I know Tony has written that the movie is an attempt to grapple honestly with the moral complexities of the war on terror. And I guess I take a different view, which is that the movie, in a strange way, on the moral realm, is very flat. It doesn't give you any notion that the FBI protested strongly against this and withdrew from the interrogation program. It doesn't give you any notion that this was an enormously controversial thing to do within the American government, which is one of the reasons why, after several years, the harsher interrogations that you see here were actually stopped. It essentially relies on an argument that, gosh, this stuff was necessary. We had to do it. In fact, in a later part of the movie, you hear, well, who am I supposed to ask now to confirm bin Laden's location? Well, we've lost the interrogation program, as if this is the only source of information that the U.S. government at the end of the day had. Right. It's something that the movie disproves.
And that goes to the thing you said earlier about taking the movie on its own terms. And Tony Scott, it portrays itself in a way as journalism, but it's really a composite and makes all sorts of journalistic sacrifices. We often see movies that say based on real events, but this movie says based on firsthand accounts of actual events, which seems like the filmmaker is trying to communicate that it's nonfiction rather than fiction. How much of a difference does that make?
I think it does make a difference. I mean, I think that every movie about actual historical events will embellish, will fictionalize to some extent. And, you know, it's certainly there's been a lot of argument about Lincoln, and which is in some ways very, very faithful to the historical record, but in other ways departs from it and takes a kind of dramatic license. I think that the film does, you know, perhaps blur the line and overstate its veracity in some ways, because this is something that Steve Cole pointed out recently in the New York Review of Books. It begins, you know, with that statement that it's based on firsthand reporting, and the first thing that you hear is the actual 9/11 calls from the World Trade Center on September 11th. So it's beginning not only with a claim of veracity, but with literal documentary, at least at you know the sound, and that I think does set you up for an expectation that what you're seeing is going to be more truthful than not. But I would say just to what Mark was saying before, it seems to me that if this movie had left out the enhanced interrogation program, had depicted the war on terror without torture and without people engaged in the hunt for bin Laden, participating in, and in some cases maybe believing in, what they were doing, I think there would have been a justifiable outcry that it was a whitewash. So I think what the movie to me is really about is about the working conditions of these intelligence officers, and about from moment to moment and from year to year, the tactical and moral and ethical problems that they faced that they didn't always have control over. I mean, what is fascinating to me about the kind of the long arc of the narrative is it starts out where these interrogations are just something that they're doing and are part of the job.
Mark, you wanted to get in there?
And then that changes, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wouldn't, you know, I agreed with most of what Tony just said. I would certainly not argue at all that they should have left out enhanced interrogation or torture. It absolutely should have been in the movie. And this is, you know, Catherine Bigelow, the director, recently made basically the same argument. You know, are we supposed to leave this out? No one has suggested they leave it out, but it's a far cry from depicting it as part of the program to depicting it as absolutely crucial to finding bin Laden, which in fact is not true.
And in fact, Mark, I think in the film, and I haven't heard much talk about this, but wouldn't you say that in the film, and this might be a little bit of a spoiler alert, so listeners, if you don't want to hear it, but
they do
technically,
I'm sorry,
really, he's dead. Technically, it's not torture that leads to the big break. The key detainee gives up the name of bin Laden's courier because of a psychological ploy.
Yes, that's true. Well, in the world of the movie, of course, he's tricked. The fellow who's absolutely is representing Mohammed al-Qahtani, who, by the way, isn't interrogated in Pakistan. He's in Guantanamo, and a lot about what's the way it's depicted is not true as well. But in fact, yes, he gives it up as part of a trick after he's interrogated. Of course, those who support the enhanced interrogation program would say, well, you know, we didn't actually ask them questions while they were being waterboarded. Again, unlike the depictions in the film, the waterboarding is part of a program, the intention of which is to break a detainee, and then you ask them questions later. And actually, the guy who ran the program, Jose Rodriguez, has pointed this out in the Washington Post. His criticism is that the interrogation is too brutal, but that it's true, as he argues, that this stuff was necessary to finding bin Laden. You know, my problem is not that interrogation is in the film. My problem, I suppose, is twofold. One is that it's depicted as absolutely crucial, as a key part of the narrative in finding bin Laden. And that, so far as we know, is simply not true. My second problem is that though there are claims that this, you know, had to be included to grapple with the moral complexity of the war on terror, et cetera, et cetera, I don't find any such grappling at all in the movie.
Although it's not like 20...
Well, I would say...
Go ahead, Tony.
Say,
yes,
I mean,
please.
I think that another way of looking at the way that the interrogations are depicted is, you know, as part of a long period of failure. That is... You know, they start out using these techniques. They get a little bit of information that's very vague information that is only of use to them because it seems to be corroborated from this, that is the sort of this name al-Kuwaiti, who's supposedly the courier. Then that that lead goes cold for 8 years. So during which time there are a number of further attacks. I think that it's not quite just in the film's own terms and in the sort of the arc of the story that it tells. It's not quite as unambiguously triumphalist as Mark suggests.
But remember, in the world of the movie, if they hadn't gotten that bit of information from Ammar, who's apparently Mohammed al-Qahtani, if they hadn't gotten it, and if the heroine of the film, and she is very much the heroine, as Brian said, hadn't seized on this bit of information, and in the face of all the skepticism of the bureaucrats and her colleagues and all the rest of it, kept to it like a terrier and kept at it the entire time, bin Laden would not have been found and killed. So
I'm sorry to say, is
crucial.
I have
to
leave it there.
The
consider this a little bit of eavesdropping on the kind of conversation that's taking place in movie theater bathrooms after the showing of Zero Dark Thirty all over America right now. A.O. Scott, film critic for the New York Times, Mark Danner, writes about the fight against al-Qaeda for the New York Review of Books. His most recent book is Stripping Bare the Body, Politics, Violence, War. Thank you both so much. Great conversation.
Great talking to you again, Mark.
Brian Lehrer.
Pleasure, Tony.
On our series, Context and a Movie, Brian Lehrer on WNYC.